The fallout from the child sex abuse scandal at Penn State continues this week. The State Farm Insurance Company will pull its advertising from Penn State football broadcasts, and General Motors may follow suit. The news is significant because corporate advertising is the lifeblood of big college football, and it means the final cost of Penn State's cover-up of child sex abuse by convicted assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky could go well beyond the $60 million fine and other penalties imposed by the NCAA this week. But will any of this lead to real change in the governance and oversight of college sports? The scandal at Penn State is the latest and perhaps the most shocking indication of a college sports system in need of reform, but it is by no means the first. For some perspective on this, we turn to Taylor Branch. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and author. Last year, he wrote a much-talked-about cover story for The Atlantic entitled The Shame of College Sports, and he joins us from WYPR in Baltimore. Taylor Branch, good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
First question, do you think the NCAA's unprecedented sanctions against Penn State will help restore some kind of balance between college academics and big-time college sports?
In a word, no.
No. Why not?
Because the report and the NCAA sanctions that were announced are pretty carefully calculated to straddle a divide between Penn State as very isolated, unique human failure and Penn State as emblematic of the overall pressurized culture of college sports. And because it straddles that divide, it basically is getting a lot of shock value because the crimes at Penn State were horrific, but it doesn't it's not even logical in pretending to address the larger culture of college sports.
Interesting. And I want to talk to you about that larger culture. We mentioned this terrific piece you wrote last year for The Atlantic, The Shame of College Sports. And in it, you make the case that college athletes should be paid. And I want to get to that argument in a moment. But first, let me ask you this about the overall culture of college sports. Given how much wealth and power big-time college football coaches have, like the late Joe Paterno had at Penn State, were you surprised at all by the Jerry Sandusky cover-up and the abuse of power that it represented?
Well, I was surprised by the depravity of Jerry Sandusky's crimes, and I was saddened by the fact that they were covered up. But I was not at all surprised by the atmosphere of control and intimidation within the Penn State Athletic Department that helped cover up those crimes, because that atmosphere and that pressure and that power is by no means isolated at Penn State. It's not that different from the culture at Alabama or Ohio State or any one of 100 other college campuses where big-time sports are king.
Yeah, and is the root cause of that culture, I mean, it's all about the money and the power that these coaches have, isn't it?
That's part of it, and that's the heart of it. But if you try to get at the structure of why this happens, it's a little more complex. It's because all of the checks and balances that could keep some sort of sanity between sports and academics have abdicated in college sports. The faculties are almost entirely absent. The administrators are overwhelmed. And the athletes themselves, who are the essential talent, that's what everybody is paying to watch, the athletes themselves are totally marginalized in the sense that all their rights are stripped. They have no voice. So the athletes at Penn State, like the athletes anywhere else, if they had known of Jerry Sandusky, would have been even more terrified than the janitors to say anything about it, because they could have their scholarships taken away without any hint of redress or due process.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about those student athletes, because in your article last year, you laid out a strong case for why college athletes should be paid. And you make the point that the university sports programs, the big ones, and the NCAA make billions of dollars every year on the backs of mostly poor, unpaid college athletes. And you call it a sort of colonial system, and say it's time to allow college athletes to organize and be paid for their work. Would that kind of change have helped prevent what happened at Penn State?
Well, the essential thing that I'm trying to get people to see here is that the NCAA cannot very well claim to protect the interests of young people and college athletes without addressing the question of their basic rights. Their rights of representation, their rights to have a voice. The athletes are excluded from any voice in the NCAA. They have no vote. They have no due process. So they have total dominion over these people while claiming to have their best interests at heart.
What about this idea that some say is a laudable idea that we've embraced for a long time, that of the student athlete, that college players are scholars first and athletes second, and that the role of the NCAA is to protect this noble principle of the student athlete?
Well, I just think that it is a skulking evasion. Essentially, they are amateurs only because we say they are amateurs without any standing in law. And it's pretty unbecoming to impose amateurism on somebody else while you're professionalizing the sport to the hilt to maximize the income for multimillion-dollar coaches who keep all the revenue, all the rights, and all the power, and then have the gall to tell the athletes that they're keeping all that for the athletes' own good. I mean, no university in its right mind would even think of saying that other students have to be amateurs, that they couldn't get a job in a pizza parlor to help pay tuition, or that they couldn't start Facebook and become a billionaire because they're students and they have to be amateurs, or they couldn't get paid as a graduate teaching assistant because they've got to be amateur graduate students too. But for athletes alone, we say not only can they not represent themselves and seek fair compensation when they're generating all this money, but that we're going to blacken their names and ruin their lives if their mother gets a Christmas card from a sports agent. This is control dreamed of only by North Korea. And we're kind of brainwashed in a way that allows these scandals and this imbalance to fester.
Taylor Branch, you have a bunch of anecdotes in your article that really tell this story well. And I'm going to start the story and I want you to finish it. You tell the story of a particular college athlete who was penalized because he literally sold the shirt off his back.
That's A.J. Green, who's a wide receiver now in the NFL, who sold the jersey that he wore for the University of Georgia to get money to go home for spring break. And the NCAA found out about it and suspended him for a number of games because under NCAA regulations, you're not allowed to enjoy any tangible benefit that could in conceivable way derive from your athletic prowess.
So he sells the shirt off his back, but gets penalized for that, but the NCAA can profit from his image and his likeness.
And so can the university, and there's a big lawsuit now working its way through the courts over whether the NCAA can sell those rights and images of athletes in perpetuity even after they've long since left college.
That's historian and author Taylor Branch, longtime critic of the NCAA. He'll be back with us in a minute with more on his case that college athletes should be paid. And what about amateur Olympic athletes? Back in a minute. It's Here and Now. Welcome back. We're talking with Taylor Branch about the NCAA and the sex abuse scandal at Penn State. On Monday, the college sports governing body fined Penn State $60 million, banned it from all postseason games for the next 4 years, and revoked some football scholarships because the university covered up years of child abuse by assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky. Our guest, historian and author Taylor Branch, doesn't think the sanctions will address the real problem in big-time college sports where money is king. So, Taylor, even if college athletes were to win the right to be paid, wouldn't we still have a system corrupted by money? And isn't that the big problem here, that college sports programs have too much influence and college administrators are seduced by all the money these programs bring into their coffers?
Yes, and I admit that I'm not saying this is an easy solution and it may be difficult, but the only hope to address those pressures, it's like the founding of the American Republic in a way, is to have an effective system of checks and balances. And right now, the faculties at most colleges have abdicated their role in the governance of their university. They want to concentrate on their specialties and not be bothered. Well, they can't afford to do that any longer. But the athletes, who are the genesis of all of the power here, are excluded by definition from the table. They have no voice. It's not just that they don't have the right to seek compensation. They can't protect themselves. They have no due process. They have no right of representation. They have no voice. Nobody asked the athletes whether they wanted to have a college football playoff. In the Olympic Games, which we inherited with even a rosier and mistier amateur tradition than surrounds college sports today, they transitioned from amateurism into professional Olympics in 1978, and nobody has noticed very much. The way that it happened is simply that Olympic athletes were given a seat at the table on all 39 of the governing committees for Olympic sports.
I want to ask you about this. On Monday, the NCAA president, Mark Emmert, acknowledged that Americans' love of sports means that college sports can sometimes become too big to fail, even too big to challenge. Do you agree with that? And does the fact that Mark Emmert expressed that view give you some hope that maybe the NCAA gets it, or is it at least acknowledging a part of the problem?
Well, they're acknowledging part of the problem. I do give him credit for that. But I have to argue that the NCAA is not just part of the problem itself, rather than the solution. It's the heart of the problem, because the NCAA, its whole purpose is to deny rights to the athletes. I mean, look at the penalties at Penn State. It took advantage of the Free Report, which fixed all blame and responsibility on human failure by the five men already indicted or fired. And these were the people exercising administrative responsibility. Now, logically, you would then penalize those offices because they failed. The coach's office, the president's office, the athletic director's office didn't do their jobs. You would take away positions there, 40 positions in the athletic department. But the NCAA did exactly the opposite. It didn't do anything to those offices where the adults are and where they can protect themselves in the NCAA, and it fastened all the penalties on scholarships for athletes who hadn't even arrived at Penn State yet. So I'm not saying that Penn State should escape general responsibility here, but I think there's just been a lot of illogical mesmerizing here over these penalties that don't really address the problem at hand.
But don't they address the problem insofar as they really hit Penn State's football program pretty hard? I mean, to the point that, you know, there are legitimate questions about whether it will recover from these penalties at all. So isn't that a pretty serious warning to other colleges and universities to shape up?
Well, it's a warning in the sense that it made everybody gasp when they watched it on television. And that's certainly true. On the other hand, if you look at it with greater scrutiny and realize that just last week the NCAA penalized Caltech in roughly the same way, 3 years on probation, a ban in postseason competition in 13 sports, not just football, lasting for years, and a $5,000 fine, which is, for tiny little Cal State, roughly comparable to the $60 million fine at Penn State, because that's what tiny Cal State earns from all these little sports. It's not a scholarship school. The transgression for which Caltech received these long-term suspensions was that athletes early in the semester hadn't fully registered for their courses and therefore were not, by the NCAA standards, fully eligible to compete. Penn State is losing big time, yes, but $60 million is revenue from 1 year's sports. They are not even considering telling Penn State you can't be on television, which the NCAA used to do, because now that revenue has skyrocketed to such a degree that it would cripple Penn State. They're going to be able to get over this in time. The bigger problem is that the remedies here pretend to get at the structure of college sports while really telling everybody that this is an isolated problem, extreme human failure at Penn State, not likely to be repeated.
You've been advocating for change in college sports for a long time, and I'm wondering if, given this latest scandal at Penn State, if you're more or less optimistic that we will see that change anytime soon or even eventually.
I am optimistic. These sports budgets are unsustainable. Higher education as a whole is a bubble coming into crisis. But right now, people are not thinking clearly enough to address the questions. Basically, I think that the whole university communities need to come together and do what universities are known for, which is engage in independent thought about the structure of college sports and how they relate to the university's academic mission and how they should be governed. And right now, they haven't done that. Eventually, I hope they will, but the Penn State scandal and these remedies that fix blame and responsibility on a few isolated individuals and then turn around and say that we fix the generalized culture of college sports and never again will young people be victimized, I mean, that's just a myth, and it needs to be broken down.
Well, Taylor Branch, thanks so much for talking to us today. We're very, very grateful.
I enjoyed talking. Thank you.
Historian Taylor Branch wrote The Shame of College Sports as a cover story for The Atlantic last year, as well as the ebook The Cartel, Inside the Rise and Imminent Fall of the NCAA. Next week on Here and Now, we'll check in with the BBC's Richard Galpin on the latest fighting in Syria. That's next week. Stay with us. There's more ahead. The news is next. You're listening to Here and Now.